Now back to wartime London for the Saturday play.
Captain Kelway was determined to leave my flat by means of a skylight leading to the roof. He had the idea that someone he did not name was waiting for him down below.
Why do you think he did not want to meet this person?
I imagine he did not wish to give the person the satisfaction of an interview.
What was the nature of your relationship with Captain Kelway?
We were lovers.
For how long had you known each other, Mrs. Rodney?
For 2 years. Robert and I met in September 1940, just after he'd been discharged from hospital following the Dunkirk evacuation. His knee was seriously injured.
Any psychiatric treatment?
Not that I am aware of.
Did his departure via the roof not strike you as being highly dangerous?
Yes, of course it was dangerous.
Did he at any time discuss matters of a confidential nature with you? As coroner, I need to know.
I was aware that he worked for one of the government ministries, but I never inquired which. One does not do so in these times of war.
What was your reaction to the news that he was found by the air raid warden, lying dead in the basement area?
Oh, shock. Extreme shock.
We present The Heat of the Day by Elizabeth Bowen. Dramatized from her novel by Christopher Fitzsimon. With Harriet Walter, Michael Maloney, and Bill Nye. London, 1942.
Stella, there's hardly any tea.
You make yourself a small pot. I'll snatch a cup in the canteen when I get to Whitehall. Oh, Robert.
Yes?
I'm supposed to telephone the solicitor about Cousin Francis this morning, but of course the telephone isn't working. And the thought of applying to that ghastly Major Browett for permission to use the office one is enough to drive me potty.
He can't refuse if you say that a relative has died in Ireland. Make it seem like a close relative.
Oh, he'll worm it out of me. There's not even a close relative of my long-divorced late husband.
Have you tried this morning?
Is there any point, Tommy?
I'll see.
What's the number?
The solicitor's letter's there. And another thing Roderick may have been trying to get through is expecting a weekend's leave.
It's ringing. Who shall I ask for?
Warby, I think. It's on the letterhead.
May I speak to Mr. Warby, please?
Warby speaking. And you are?
Robert Kelway. I'm ringing on behalf of Mrs. Rodney.
Is she there?
I'll put her on.
I gave away that you're in my flat.
Oh, it slipped out. I'll go down and get the milk.
Hello?
Mrs. Rodney.
Yes?
You'll have received my letter. I do offer my sincere condolences.
Oh, thank you. You know, I only met Cousin Francis once, 20 years ago. We stayed at Mount Morris. He was my husband's cousin.
Captain Morris had come over from Ireland, I understand, to see if there was any way he could be of use to the war effort.
Uh-huh.
Unlikely, I'm sure you'll agree. He had obtained a travel permit on account of wishing to see his wife. As I expect you know, Mrs. Morris resides in a, home.
Yes.
He was waiting in the visitor's parlour when he suddenly took a turn. They immediately sent for an ambulance, but too late.
How dreadful.
It would have been quite impossible to arrange for his remains to be taken back to Ireland due to the restrictions on travel.
Of course.
So, I have arranged for the interment to take place locally at Stevenage tomorrow.
I don't think I could get a day's leave. I work at the Ministry of Information and one must...
I do suggest that you try, Mrs. Rodney. And perhaps you would kindly inform your son...
Roderick's in the army at Reading. He couldn't possibly get... Well, of course I'll tell him.
I should greatly appreciate it if you would make the attempt to attend, Mrs. Rodney.
I will make the attempt. I would like us to be represented at Cousin... But you'll understand his relatives. Well, I can't imagine they'd approve of my being there since Victor and I were divorced, even though Victor's dead.
Yet I should appreciate it, Mrs. Rodney, and I'm sure your late husband's... Well, late cousin would as well. The times are without precedent, Mrs. Rodney.
The times are without precedent. How often was I told that during adolescence, during the Great War, with telegrams arriving announcing the death of brothers? But it seems all times are without precedent. My impetuous marriage to Victor, our divorce, rendered unnecessary by his death. Delayed results of war wounds, it was said. My meeting with Robert, another mutilated heir in this war, less confidently referred to as great. Sad for Cousin Francis dying in one of these bedraggled home counties, all entangled in barrage balloons and barbed wire. Can't imagine he liked England. Even if he may have felt guilty about not helping to fight England's war.
Camp coffee. It's air sense, but I dare say it's all the hotel could come up with.
Oh, thank you.
Not much of a send-off, this, for the poor old boy. What a place to snuff it out in.
Wisteria Lodge.
I mean to say, in a nut house.
You knew Captain Morris, then?
What else would make one turn up at a show like this? Yes, dear old Frankie and I had great get-togethers in that drafty old pile of his. I do rightly take it you're Mrs. Rodney?
Yes.
Harrison's the name.
Oh. You come from Ireland?
I go there.
Fishing?
No time. Know any of these people?
Not really.
Thought not, the way you were seated apart in the church.
Ah, I think you must be Mrs. Rodney.
Yes.
Warby. How do you do?
Excuse me. I'll see if there's anything less disgusting and more fortifying to drink.
I'm at a disadvantage not knowing anyone.
Nor do I.
Who was that, by the way?
I think he said his name was Harrison.
I don't recall that name on the list of people I had to contact. I hope he's not been annoying you.
I did find his remarks rather inappropriate.
Well, Mrs. Rodney, it is my duty to inform you, since your son is legally still a minor, that he inherits the late Captain Morris's entire estate in Tipperary.
Good heavens! Roderick never even met Cousin Francis.
Captain Morris had no children. He probably liked you and your late husband.
We spent our honeymoon at Mount Morris. Goodness! And now all this. The times certainly are without precedent, Mr. Warby.
Stella.
Robert. Oh, darling.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. I was certain something had happened to you.
Oh, no. Telephone's on the blink again.
Oh.
I had a terrible dream last night, and I was certain something had happened to you.
Some sort of telepathic apprehension of loss. Everyone seems to be having them because of the Blitz, I suppose.
An odd place for lunch. Isn't this the kind of plushy place that only opens at night?
They're desperately trying to make it lively.
Then let's tuck in. All I've got for us tonight is two teeny slices of liver.
We'll sustain ourselves on love and Horlicks.
And admiring the flaky neo-regency falals of my ceiling. Now, my dearest, I must tell you. Victor's lovely, eccentric Irish cousin has left all his property to Roderick.
Good for Roderick!
On the train, I was wondering, what does Roderick think of us?
What can Roderick think of us?
Were we right to decide not to live under the same roof in deference to him? Or have I denied my son a balanced male-female background?
Not at all. Roderick strikes me as being one of the very few truly positive chaps I know in this... Well, sweetheart, how shall I put it? Equivocal world of ours.
Oh, really?
Due to who, my darling?
Robert.
Well, it's true.
I've done my best not to stifle him. You know what widowed mothers can be like.
Don't I? How has he taken this windfall?
One can't telephone soldiers in barracks. And he may not get my letter for days.
Ah.
Thank you. Oh, and there was a very curious man at the funeral. A sort of commercial traveller type.
Oh?
Claimed he knew you, or of you, ingratiating. And on the train, he said he'd actually met old Frankie on the very morning of his death in London, of all places. I must say, he didn't strike me as being the kind of person Cousin Francis would know.
You travelled back to town with this bloke?
He shot out of the station bar and asked me to join him. He thought I could do something about retrieving papers he'd left with Cousin Francis, but I had to point out it was none of my business. How did he know me?
We've never run into him. London's got so small.
He has a kind of squint. Well, not exactly, but a funny way of using both his eyes differently at the same time. His name's Harrison.
Perhaps he listens to careless talk.
The thing is, he rang me up at home and said he wanted to call round to see me. What should I do?
Shouldn't you simply tell him to go to hell? No, not your style. You look sad, darling. Has somebody been telling you I'm too tired?
No. Are you?
No. For one thing, where would I get the time?
Dare I hope Mr. Harrison may not be coming? Why did he telephone? Nothing more demoralizing than waiting for someone one doesn't want to see. His very persistence. How did he come by my number? What can he know of Robert? None of his business, me and Robert. Shouldn't ever have agreed to let him come round. Casual. Sit. Read the listener. Put out more flags. Mr. Waugh's cynical new novel of irresponsible pre-war attitudes.
Mrs. Rodney?
Mr. Harrison, good evening.
I'm a few minutes late.
I know.
I was listening to the band in the park.
Oh, is there a band?
A Polish regiment, I think. Nothing else to do.
For you or for the Poles?
The band. Rootless here, really. Not expecting anyone else?
No.
Good. I found your street door on the latch. That in order?
Quite. I left it open for you.
Oh, good. Just walked up. May I sit? You might mind if I smoke?
Do.
You won't?
No, thanks. The band, then you could have come earlier.
Well, I could, as things turned out. I took it that, as we had said, 8 before, that might not have been convenient.
It is not convenient that you come at all.
Ha ha. You're very frank.
What else can you suppose?
I still haven't recovered those papers I left with your late cousin.
But I told you none of Captain Morris's papers have come to me.
Ah.
And anyway, after all that fuss the first time we met, you said they didn't matter. Just a few things you jotted down to entertain the old fellow. You said. Excuse me.
Shall I?
No, do sit down.
Ah.
Hello? Try button A. Hello? Oh, you! Oh, darling! You are you? For how long? Have you had dinner? Yes. I'm afraid that might be best. I think I've used up most of my rations. Of course, naturally. Don't be so idiotic. Yes, there is at the moment, but there soon won't be. Bye. You had something to tell me.
I said I wanted a talk. Look, is that an ashtray?
Yeah.
All your things are so pretty.
What is?
Even this ashtray.
It's not mine. Nothing in this flat is. All my things are in storage for the duration.
Everything's so... I thought it almost... But the photographs on the mantelpiece.
They're mine. All that is.
That one's very like...
Me?
Yes.
That's my son, Roderick. He was on the telephone just now. He's got 2 days' leave.
Oh, I thought it was...
Captain Kelway? Do you mean the photograph or the telephone call?
The call. It's obvious which photo is which. I assume Robert Kelway was...
On his way here?
Well...
Well, he isn't. But Roderick is. I'd be very glad.
Well, yes, of course.
I think you said you know Robert.
By sight. I've seen him around. Attractive chap, so I always think.
Oh, you seem to be around a great deal.
To be frank, I'd seen him with you before you and I met, so... I was not altogether surprised when I saw his photograph. I never forget a face that interests me.
Robert ought to be flattered.
Ha ha. Ever mentioned my name?
You mean, has he ever mentioned your name to me?
No. Have you ever mentioned my name to him?
I've no idea. I may have. I really don't remember. Look here. You asked yourself round this evening because you said it was urgent that you should tell me something. Just exactly what have you come to say?
I've been getting round to that. I hardly know how to put it. You should be a bit more careful whom you know.
In general?
Actually, I did rather mean in particular. You like to trust the people you like to know?
I suppose so, why?
As to one of them, I could tell you a thing or two that might surprise you.
What are you then, a private detective? I wonder if you are quite ordinary in the head.
Frankness again. Ha ha. Funny about the war makes people say what's really on their mind.
I don't think it's just the war.
No. Hey, you're a thoughtful one, then. You do have a good head as well as good looks.
Thank you. Exactly what do you want?
You to give me a break. Me to come here, be here, in and out of here, on and off, to be in your life, as they call it. Your life just as it is, except less of that.
Photograph?
Yes, him. There.
Turning Robert's picture to the wall is hardly the way to ingratiate yourself, I should have thought.
You don't know the half about him.
I imagine most people know about us.
I don't mean that.
What don't I know, then?
What I've found out. I work for the War Office, as well as Robert, you know. Different section, different place. Better not ask. Better just take the hint. There's something like nothing else between you and me. Even if you don't know.
Whatever do you mean?
You and me. You know? I could see to it that Robert is left alone.
Would you call this an attempt at blackmail?
Not really, just protection.
You're suggesting that I should break off one friendship, begin another with you, and I'm to do both at once, in a minute, now, with no more questions than at a government order. It may, of course, be just that you see yourself, as you manifestly do, as a quite exceptional man. What then? What are you hiding up your sleeve? You mean I am to do as you say, or else? Or else what?
A lot could happen to him.
You must be clearer if you're trying to frighten me.
You know what he does in the War Office?
Indeed, I do not. Nor does he know what I do at the Ministry of Information. We do not discuss those.
He's in a very hush-hush section, and he's not being discreet, I'm afraid. For your very private information, he's being watched.
Need I ask by whom?
I am trying to be helpful, you know. Fact is, he may be being deliberately indiscreet, possibly to the extent of passing on messages for a consideration.
I see. So I'm to form a disagreeable association with you in order that Robert may be left alone to sell his country.
Oh, that's putting it a bit crudely, don't you think?
Mr. Harrison, there are in this world, and this may surprise you, people one simply does not believe. And you are one of them. Roderick, do you believe what you're told about people?
It depends on what I'm told, Mother, and who tells me.
Naturally, but in general?
Well, I'm not told much in barracks, so sometimes I think it's a bit fishy if I'm told anything. My chum Fred says, go by what you find out yourself.
If what you were told was about someone you knew?
Well, if I properly knew the person, I'd already know the thing. If it was news to me, and then it turned out to be true, I suppose I should take it that, after all, I never had properly known the person.
I hope the sofa's long enough. Stretch out your legs.
Oh, yes, it is. Who was here that I didn't know?
What are they doing to you in that barracks? You look kind of bony.
It's probably through waiting for things to happen. Fatigues, inspections. It's meaningless. You answered the telephone in your company present voice.
It was only a man called Harrison.
Oh, the man you said was hanging around at Cousin Francis's funeral.
I expect so. Roderick, Robert was asking about your commission.
Oh, how is Robert?
Very well. This weekend he's at his mother's.
Like I am. Mount Morris. I suppose the solicitor hasn't said when I enter into possession.
No, but at least all the legal things have been signed about Cousin Nettie and seeing to her bills being paid at Wisteria Lodge and everything. That's a step.
Do you think I should go and see her? She is the widow of my benefactor.
She might be upset. In fact, I believe she's completely gone in the head.
But perhaps I should make the attempt.
Cousin Nettie was never really at home at Mount Morris. Well, never at home in Ireland, rather. Wisteria Lodge, in spite of being a home, is curiously much more like the kind of home she'd have felt at home in.
Well, perhaps I'll go on my next leave.
I answered all the solicitor's questions this evening. This is the file if you want to look before you go to sleep.
Thanks. But I think I'll devote the whole of tomorrow morning to Mount Morris. Something nice to look forward to. So, you were writing away when poor Mr. Harrison came.
Why poor?
Well, for one thing, I don't see any glasses. Don't you like him, or is he a teetotaler?
Oh, for heaven's sake, Roderick, on and on about Harrison. Can't you see how he bores me?
Then why do you have him here, in the flat?
Well, you know how people drop in, especially now.
Well, I know how they keep dropping into houses, but not up to flats. That's the point of a flat, you once told me.
You're not growing up to be a bully, are you?
Oh, no. But I used to know most of your friends, or at least about them. Ooh, hey, my eyes are closing. Do you mind if I just drop off?
Oh, my poor boy. You must be worn out. Roderick's extraordinary absorption with a property he has never seen. A country house and 300 acres unexpectedly inherited in a land totally outside this cycle of treason and mistrust. Did I once tell him that his father and I spend our honeymoon at Mount Morris? Probably assumes he was conceived there. His past and his future. Not his present. Nothing to do with this squalid present, this time of guarded conversations, spying on one another. Is Harrison spying on Robert? Or is Robert spying on Harrison?
It's been limping around the sky for the last 10 minutes, in and out of the searchlights. A Hancock. like a moth round a lamp. They'll get it.
It's probably lost, trying to find its way back to Hamburg or somewhere.
Having deposited its lethal eggs. There are the guns.
Don't watch it. Draw the blackout curtains. I want to switch on the light.
There. Mission accomplished.
For whom?
For the Bosch pilot, he dropped his bombs. And for the anti-aircraft blighters in Hyde Park. Did I tell you that the large house on the other side of the wood from my mother's has been turned into quite a luxurious hotel for POWs?
When can we do what we said we might do, darling? Go down to Epping for the day?
To Homedean?
Yes.
Next time I have to go, we both might, but I... What have you in view down there? Research my case history?
Naturally. Yeah. It could be before I go to Mount Morris.
I still don't see that you really should have to go over to Ireland. It's too silly.
It's only a business journey for the inside of a week, and I've got permission.
It's not how long you're going to be away, it's how much away you're going to be.
I don't want to have to go back there. In fact, I dread it.
Whatever was the old fool up to unload the past on a boy like that? And now you mix yourself up in it.
I thought you thought Roderick inheriting the place was a good thing. Really, Robert, I've been through more than enough convincing the passport office. Do I have to go through it all over again with you?
They are not in love with you.
Well, weeks ago, you agreed I would have to go.
Did I? Well, yes, I suppose I did.
Has anything changed since then?
What shall I do while you're away?
Oh, don't make me more unhappy.
Well, all right. We'll go down to Homedean on Saturday. I'll write a card to Mother and Ernestine.
I forgot to ask you, what have you told your mother and sister?
That we're coming down for a country walk.
I should have worn Sabella's shoes.
Ernestine's not so subtle as to notice that, though my mother may.
Who will she think I am?
I think I've got it firmly into her head that you're something working in a very important government office, and that we go for tramps on Sunday afternoons. She said, you mean hikes.
Does that mean we shall have to go for a walk?
We may be glad to. Now you can see Homedean.
You didn't tell me it was a manor house. I've never seen half timbering with balconies and balustrades.
It was built in 1900.
I bet there are begonias.
Yes.
Oh, yes, and there's a pergola and a dovecot and a tennis pavilion. Could there be gnomes?
Yes, by the bird bath. hi, hello, Ernie.
Robert, what's become of the taxi?
We got out at the picket gate.
Of course, you have come to walk.
This is Mrs. Rodney.
How do you do?
Hello. Not that there's anywhere picturesque to walk round here. Robert, you'll find Muttykins in the lounge, though, of course, she's been expecting to hear the taxi. Well, I have to rush the pony. We're only saying this morning, Mrs. Rodney, it took being shot in the leg to make Robert walk. See you at tea.
What on earth can she mean?
As a child, I hated going for walks.
Yes, but to refer to your Dunkirk wound like that.
Oh, after I was demobbed, they used to joke that I limped on purpose so as not to have to do anything I didn't want to.
Goodness. And Muttykins?
My mother. We call her that.
The lounge. Blackly furnished. Antique oak. Art brown paper. Curtains, copper chenille. Everything dark, consuming the light. Mahogany pieces. Probably evacuees from other rooms. All reproduction. Nothing genuine. Bare pedestal table. Niches and nooks and recesses. Where does Mrs. Kelway conceal herself? The bowl of dahlias, a decoy arranged to draw one's attention from any human...
Stella, do come and meet my mother.
Where? Oh, yes.
The screen is to keep off the draught. We're told we must save fuel so we don't light the fire till November.
How do you do?
Oh, managing. But what became of the taxi?
We decided to walk from the gate. Mrs. Rodney likes to walk in the country.
Ernestine has been listening for the taxi.
It's so nice to be out of London.
I seldom go to London during the war, as I hear we're asked not to travel for no reason. Though I do not care for walking. I've always been a knitter, you see. This jumper is for my grandson, Ernestine's boy. He's in the army.
Oh, and so is my son.
Sometimes I ask myself, how long will it last?
Oh, come. The army may not be much, but it should take more than Roderick, Mrs. Rodney's son, and Christopher Robin to do it in.
I did not mean the army. I meant the war.
Perhaps we should set out on our walk.
Oh, no. No, tea will be coming in shortly. And what about Mrs. Rodney's shoes?
It doesn't matter. They're old ones.
I should have worn something stronger. Robert, why not take Mrs. Rodney upstairs to see your cricket groups instead of standing around?
Oh, yes. I'm dying to see the rest of the house.
Robert's room. Varsity chair, swivel lamp, monogrammed backs of brushes standing high on their parching bristles. Narrow, glacial bed. Glass cases, bird's eggs, fossils, butterflies, sporting trophies, everything manly. Or adolescent.
The musical box was given to me by an aunt for my 10th birthday.
Goodness, Robert, how many photographs are there? You didn't hang them all up.
60, 70? No, I didn't. As you see, I haven't taken them down.
Then your mother, Ernestine, they must really be very fond of you.
They expect me to be very fond of myself.
Yet I don't think you are. And what were you doing then?
Hmm?
And then? And then?
I not only have no idea now, but must have had even less at the time.
Still, these must once have been moments.
Imitation ones. Can you think of a better way of sending a person mad than nailing that pack of his own lies all round the room where he has to sleep?
Darling, they've made this room as if you were dead. The bareness of the round mahogany table somewhat relieved by buns, a loaf, a cake that looks as if it's been of long standing, a japanned tea tray opposite Mrs. Kelway.
I would offer you some of my butter, Mrs. Rodney, but that would only make you uncomfy.
We all have our butter ration on these little china shelves.
It's quite all right. I never take butter.
Did I hear Robert say that you're off to Ireland?
Yes, my son has inherited some property.
Over there. No one realises there's a war on.
Oh, I think they have their shortages too. No petrol, nothing imported like tea and coffee.
One can exist without tea and coffee. But I believe there's masses of steaks and cream and bacon and eggs. Doesn't seem fair, does it?
We can drink tea only once a day, Mrs. Rodney. My son tells me that in London you would not notice the war. I'm afraid it's far from the same here. Robert, why are you making such heavy weather of cutting the cake?
You don't think it's time we bought a new one?
A new knife?
A new cake.
But that one hasn't been eaten. I'm sure Mrs. Rodney will take us if she finds us. We simply don't have the kind of luxuries they have in Ireland.
Happily, Mrs. Rodney does not eat cake.
Goodness. Why? Are you afraid it would make you stout?
Surely Mrs. Rodney is free not to eat cake if she doesn't want to, Muttykins. That is what I mean by the difference between England and Germany.
Oh, I dare say the Nazis would force her to eat cake.
The English are extraordinary. For if Holmdene is not England, I do not know what is. That the current between myself and Robert should be cut off by nothing more psychic than Mrs. Kelway's tea table, I might have expected. The dullness, the numbness, the grotesquerie. But what can be this unexpected qualm as to the propriety of having come to Holmdene at all, observing what has made Robert what he is? Has it come between us?
How long had you been standing like that on my doorstep, Mr. Harrison?
Only about 3/4 of an hour. I calculated you'd catch the 6:55 from Epping and drop in somewhere for a bite on your way from the station.
Your calculation was correct.
Ah.
We dined in Soho, and I walked home.
I should like a word.
Go ahead. Excuse me while I change my shoes.
I can't help feeling we understand each other at last. You do, for one thing, seem more relaxed.
What I am is excessively tired.
Must have been quite a day.
Why?
Meeting Captain Kelway's family.
That and everything else.
Look, if you feel done in, you don't have to talk. I'd be always happy sitting around.
Oh? Is this your evening off?
I don't quite,
Is this business or pleasure?
I should have thought, you know, that you ought to know.
What else have I been doing?
One thing one can see you've been doing, Mrs. Rodney, is thinking things over.
Thinking what over?
Our little talk. Today, you did exactly what I'd have done in your place. Had a deco at his relatives.
Yes?
Went to look at the first place where rot could start.
You mean spied around a house?
You, being a woman, wouldn't miss a thing.
I've not said anything to Robert, apart from asking whether he knows you. He doesn't.
No. I may tell you, it's been evident nobody's put the wind up him so far. Can I get you anything?
Yes. Will you bring me a glass of milk?
Ah.
The bottle's in the refrigerator in the kitchen.
Ah. Yes, of course.
You don't drink milk, I expect. Oh, did you get those papers back?
Which papers?
The ones which got mixed up with Cousin Francis's things. If indeed there were any papers.
Oh, that's all fixed up here.
Thank you. Mr. Harrison, you wanted to get to know me for a different reason.
Just say I was killing two birds with one stone. You had, of course, originally come in for scrutiny under the regulation check-up. Motive, women or money. Frankly, after the showings of the check-up, I wrote you off, crossed out Cherchez la femme, and switched to money. Then I found there wasn't anything along that line either. So I had to find a reason. We have a chap, and a nice chap, selling his country. Now, a chap's not going to do that without a reason. Having eliminated women and money, the psychological angle seemed my only hope. Frankly, at that time, it was my object to meet you, date up, have a drink or two, chat...
As indeed we did.
As we did, and see what light you might have thrown on him.
And did it work?
Well, things, as they can do, took an unforeseen turn. I more or less stumbled onto something that gave me all I wanted as to our friend. Conclusive.
Then, if you had not contrived to meet me when you did, it would not still have been necessary for you to meet me now.
Actually, I have to admit not.
What a pity, then.
What's a pity?
That we ever did meet.
I wouldn't call it that, though there have been times when I called it the very hell.
You did not have to. You did not have to dog me. You forced the meeting. Now you complain that it had, after all, no point. You come round and waste my time by telling me I waste yours.
Do you know how it feels to me when anything slips up? Haywire. Month after month of charging up, ticking over, getting nowhere. I'm not made for that sort of thing. I'm not made for it.
You've got no time for me, then.
It's funny. You don't listen to what I say, yet in spite of that, I can feel us getting to know each other. You and I are not so unalike.
Below a certain level, everybody's horribly alike. You succeeded in making a spy out of me. Will you go now? I think I must go to bed.
Right.
Where exactly do you live? I have no idea.
There are two or three places where I can turn in.
But where, for instance, do you keep your razor?
I have two or three razors. Did you know you said horrible?
I'm tired.
No, what you actually said was horribly alike. That simply made no contact with what I meant.
Sorry. I thought you meant something more. If it only were that you loved me, I could do worse than not love you back. But there has been something worse. Somehow you've distorted love. You may not feel what it feels to be a spy. I do. Ever since you came to me with that story about Robert being one, I keep catching myself out, actually spying on him. And you've banked on me not having the courage to ask one question, and you've been right. So far. However, don't let us talk again.
I must say, I liked it when you let me fetch you that glass of milk.
Please be sure to slam the street door behind you. I still don't know where you live.
Well, don't worry. When you return from Ireland, I shall look in again. That is, if you'll let me.
The contrast. Holme Dean with its concealed entrance and betrayed garden, and Mount Morris's handsome open gateway with its exultantly welcoming avenue of limes. The exhilarating sensation of being outside war here, overcoming exhaustion. Trains across England late, cancelled, stopped dead for hours in the blackout. The unimaginably grimy discomfort of the crowded mail boat. And then Dublin. Those fearless lights, neon signs, a city apparently in the throes of a carnival. In my fatigue, I imagine this is another time rather than another country. Darling Roderick, I'm here at Mount Morris going through countless bundles and bundles of papers thoughtfully labelled by your cousin Francis.
In case of blocked gutters, in case of my death, in case of parachutists. The old retainer Donovan tells me that his late master had tank traps dug on the avenue. When it became clear that Mr. Hitler had no intention of invading England via Ireland, Cousin Francis came over to London to try and enlist. Donovan also tells me that Batman Harrison had been a visitor here, which surprises me. But Donovan couldn't make out why he came. He described him as the gentleman with the discord between his two eyes. Cousin Francis seems to have been obsessed by not having an heir, but he has found you, and poor old Donovan can't wait to meet the new master. He says it won't be long before you're made a general. It's more likelihood of that, I said.
Where on earth did you get a car?
Where cars come from. I was afraid I'd miss you at the station and have to occupy it alone. The chauffeur's taking us to a friendly restaurant in Titchfield Street.
There's a shock seeing you there at the barrier. It's inconceivable that I should have forgotten what you're like, but had I? There was something I hadn't allowed for. Love. One can quite forget how love acts.
I know you've been all by yourself in that house, but I feel jealous, as though you'd been spending your time with some sort of enemy of mine, or rival. So far, the best has been touching your coat with this tweed. I know where I am.
You have no enemy anywhere in me.
Why should you have to say that?
We are friends of circumstance. War. This isolation, this atmosphere in which everything goes on, but nothing's said. 2 months ago now, nearly 2 months ago, somebody came to me with a story about you. They said you were passing information to the enemy.
What?
They said you were passing information to the enemy. I didn't know. I did not know what to think.
What did you do?
Nothing. That's what I'm telling you. It's not true, is it?
2 months ago. Well, it's certainly nothing like thinking a thing over. Or did it simply slip your memory till tonight? What would have been wrong in asking me? Did you think I would take umbrage? Who was this? Oh, my God, what a conversation.
Harrison.
Harrison who?
No, just Harrison. It's the man I met at the funeral.
Of course, yes. I remember. I thought you said he was such a bore.
But it isn't true, is it?
It can't be real that you're asking me this. Oh, what does one say in this situation? What do you take me for? I never asked myself, what do I take you for? You. You couldn't... No, you... Just have come and said, this is what I've been told.
You have sometimes said that on a particular issue, anybody is capable of anything.
Have I? I don't remember.
How was I to know what was true?
How indeed?
He said it would be dangerous for you were I to tell you.
What he says then cuts a good deal of ice. But you acted on the assumption that it was true?
How could I take any chances when I love you?
Well, how peculiar it seems that you should love me.
Oh, my darling, for God's sake. This is breaking my heart. Oh.
Food.
You should have seen the old retainer's joy when we heard of Montgomery's victory in North Africa on the wireless. They're outside it all over there in Ireland, but astonishingly involved. And there are terrible shortages. I unwittingly used up their whole month's ration of paraffin oil in the lamp one evening. I took it into the drawing room and sat, not even reading. I imagined Roderick's wife there one day. Why not, after all?
Stella.
Yes?
Talking of that, why should we not marry?
You and I?
Put it that way. Anyway, why not?
We've got into the way of not marrying, I suppose. It would be such a business, Robert. Why not wait till we see what's going to happen, like we always have?
You think I'm being very conventional this evening?
Considering everything and the things I said in the car just now, it's very nice of you to ask me to marry you, my darling.
The fact is, I cannot bear you out of my sight.
But I hardly ever am. Do I need looking after?
Well, your friend, what's his name, must have thought so. If he thinks you should be more careful whom you take up with, so do I, frightening you like that.
Harrison, it's an easy enough name to remember.
Harrison, then? How if I? Stella need looking after, too. It shook me just now in the car when you calmly said that where I, my life was concerned, anything, for all you knew, might be possible.
Calmly? Oh, never, Robert.
How am I to know what more reservations you may still have in your mind? I see only one way of knowing. Are you going to marry me?
Robert, that's simply forcing things.
But it's not such a new idea, or a wild one.
You've made it sound wild, Robert.
The idea of anyone coming along and frightening you is appalling, Stella. You love me.
Look, the waiter is hovering. It's very late. I do wish you'd find out who Harrison is.
Ask my spies. By all means.
But is he anybody?
In barracks, November the 22nd, 1942. Dear Mother, thank you for all the news of Mount Morris.
When all this is over, the estate has got to be my living. I plan to set about everything scientifically. One can't go fluffing along as an amateur like poor old Cousin Francis. I didn't tell you I had applied for a day pass to see Cousin Nettie because I thought you'd probably try to talk me out of it. I just turned up. She is only mildly odd. What I did not know is that Francis and Nettie were cousins as well as being married. She said that nature hated their union, which is why they were not blessed with children, and the fields at Mount Morris always turned brown when she was there. When I said she must always consider it as her home, she did rather get in a stew and said I must never take her away from Wisteria Lodge.
When I was leaving for the station, I said I was going to walk through the churchyard to be sure that Cousin Francis's grave is properly looked after. And she said, oh no, Francis was never here. You'll find him in the Morris tomb at Kildorrery.
Well, for me, Mrs. Rodney, any evening out with you is an occasion. Even if I have got to scold you.
Oh, why?
You have done what I told you not to.
I cannot think what you mean.
Oh, you can if you want to know. You've been naughty.
Really?
Yes, really. Rash. As you know, we have a mutual friend.
If you mean Robert, he doesn't know you.
Oh, so that's what he says. And you thought you'd take a chance on it and tip him off.
Naturally, I asked him if he knew you.
So he said no, he'd never set eyes on me, which is not unlikely. When I told you that I would know if you tipped him off, you should have thought twice. I can tell you the very day, or rather the very night, that you did.
What makes you think so?
Because immediately you came back from Ireland, your friend altered his course, pulled out of old haunts, which was not unnoticed. Thanks to you, our friend has pretty well dished himself. I told you, the only case for leaving him loose was the chance he might lead us to something bigger. Now, the only possible case for leaving him loose falls down. No more reason why things shouldn't take their course. That is what it's up to me to report.
So you do?
Well, I've got myself to think about. And, of course, the country.
I see. So far, who besides you knows this?
Up to date, only I know. It still has to go on up the line.
Still?
Hmm.
Through my blunder, this is your moment to foreclose. You're blackmailing me into entering a liaison with you in order to save my lover's skin.
Isn't that...
I know what you're going to say again. Isn't that a bit crude? But it really is up to me now.
Move to the exit calmly, please, ladies and gentlemen. The nearest shelter is on the right when you go down the stairs.
Think again, darling. How could I have involved you? How could I? Was this a thing to put on anyone else?
You could have told me in not so many words.
Sometimes I thought I had. I'm cold.
Pull up the eiderdown. When did you think you'd told me?
When not? Not at any one moment, but there were times when it seemed impossible that, being as we were, you should not know. There's been no part of my disaffectedness that I've hidden from you. In accepting me, I thought that somehow you must be accepting this in your own way. I thought, yes, silence is better. Why risk some silly, unmeaning battle between two consciences? I did not know, you did not know, till you asked me.
That was the night you asked me to marry you.
That other night, earlier, when you told me about meeting Harrison at the funeral, were you trying him out on me? Oh, Stella, don't. You unnerved me. It was enough to have been in action once on the wrong side. Step up to step to Dunkirk. That was the end of that war. Army of Freedom, queuing up to be taken off by pleasure boats. The extremity. Can they not conceive that's a thing you never come back from? How many of us do they imagine ever come back? We're to be avoided. Dunkirk, maimed men.
I never knew you before you were a maimed man.
In one way, that would have been impossible. I was born maimed. Dunkirk was waiting there in us. What a race. Look at my family. And they're like a class without a middle, a race without a country. There are thousands like us and we're still breathing.
You've been doing just what Harrison said. Selling your country.
Yes. Aren't you able to get away from that?
Just tell me, why?
Why?
Why are you against this country?
This country?
Yes, this, where we are.
There are no more countries left, nothing but names. What country have you and I outside this bedroom? Those laughing photographs of your brothers, handsome chaps, killed in Flanders in 18, they took what they had with them. They were the finish. All we have now are exhausted shadows, dragging themselves out again to fight. A useless repetition.
But, darling, haven't you thought... Of course you've thought about something as obvious as treason.
Another word, like country. Words like that, yes, they still leave a terrible dust in the mind. Even in yours, what they once meant has gone. Words without meaning are dead words, corrupt words.
Aren't you just hiding behind what you say you've inherited from your family?
Probably, but all that language is dead currency. I want a new heredity, order. Our so-called democracy gives us nothing but muddle and mediocrity. You're free people? Mice let loose in the middle of the Sahara.
And supposing the Nazis do take over here, with or without your collaboration, what then?
The Nazis? That will not be the end. Just a step on the road to something better. This war is only an interim, a necessary interim, unfortunately. So much bloody quibbling about some thing that's pre-decided itself. Please believe, if you can believe anything I say, there will be a better world.
Since Robert is what Harrison says he is, Harrison must be what he said he is. This room has a look of no hour. Robert sleeping in the deceived bedroom. Me stupidly pacing about in this unsupportable blankness of mind. Oh, his photograph. The black and white of what is forever dissolved into the features of love. Try to picture life without him. Turn it to the wall. The blank white back of the mound.
I heard something.
Robert.
You called me?
I should never have let you come here.
Oh, there, there. I should have come anyway.
This would be the first place.
I was at home, Dean, last night. At about midnight, the telephone rang. I'd always known I was in danger, but I'd never felt it. I was in terror of never seeing you again. And what a place to be arrested in. Theirs to be the last faces I saw. It was only some silly woman from the WVS for Ernestine.
They saw that you were afraid?
Yes. Naturally, they couldn't imagine why.
If I had slept with Harrison, would he have kept you out of this?
Naturally, he would say so. You didn't try.
I nearly relented. Last night, when I was having dinner with him, and you were with your mother and sister, he gave me a dressing down for having done what he'd warned me not to do, spoken to you about it. I took it he was starting to extricate himself from such a relationship. Then there was an air raid warning, but I felt he'd already started to dismiss me.
You left it pretty late.
Because up to then I didn't believe him.
What's he like?
I have less and less idea. What is it you are? A revolutionary? No, a counter-revolutionary? You know, Robert, for anybody doing anything so definite, selling your country... You talk remarkably vaguely. To me, it's as if there still was something you'd never formulated.
Tonight has been the first time we've talked.
You never talk to others, the others you're in this with?
Oh, it isn't as if we sit around swapping ideas. Anyway, I must dress.
But you said you heard someone waiting outside the house.
I heard shuffling steps every now and again.
I thought you were asleep.
Stop! Don't touch the curtain.
If it had been his step, I should have heard it. In fact, I should have known it before I heard it. I wanted to crash the window open and blaze the lights on. I wanted to say, yes, here we are together.
If there's somebody at the front, there could be somebody at the back.
No, that could depend on who that somebody in the front is. Whether it's Harrison or not.
Why?
He could be watching the house for his own reasons. He may believe himself to be in love. People torment themselves.
Darling, did you once say there was a way out onto the roofs?
Yes. The landing skylight. They showed me how I could get out that way if I were cut off by an incendiary. Oh, Robert, you must have seen it every night.
Show me.
But...
No, very well, what?
He may have kept his mouth shut. None of this may be true.
Then there's no harm done. What a laugh on the roof. Either this is nothing or it's the payoff. I don't think it's nothing. You were right. I had no business to come. I should have thought of you. My time's run right out. I'm watched, and they know I'm wise.
But they'd think of everything we'd think of. There could be somebody on the roof.
There's one great thing about a roof. There's only one way off it.
It's steep.
I wish I hadn't got this stiff knee. We never danced, for instance. There may not be anyone on the roof. It's 50-50. I want to go by the roof. I don't want to run out. I want you to send me off.
When you reach the top of the ladder, you push your shoulder against the skylight.
You take care of yourself. It's a lovely bright night. Dozens of searchlights. Take care of yourself, sweetheart. Good night.
Good night.
Mother, do you really not mind what we talk about?
No, my darling. But see that notice above the tea urns?
Remember, walls have ears.
Yes.
What was Robert doing on the roof?
That seemed to be the best way of leaving my flat. He was expecting to be arrested at any minute.
Could he have been arrested?
Yes, he could have been arrested as a traitor.
Good Lord. But why should they arrest him as a... What you said?
Because it had all been proved.
Oh. Mother, it is very good of you to travel down to see me. Perhaps it's better for you having something to do. But Fred said I should have applied for compassionate leave.
Oh, darling Roderick, I don't think it would have been granted under these circumstances.
I was going to put it that you and Robert were engaged till I got your letter. Because you easily could have been, I should think. I suppose everything I try saying must sound ridiculous. You see, I haven't got anything that I can say.
In which case, I had no right to tell you. But you did ask me why Robert was on the roof.
It was what I wanted to know. He was on the other side in this war.
Let us say, a different side.
He must have been pretty brave. The other way round, he might have got a VC, quite likely.
Do you know what Robert once said? That you were the most positive person he knew.
Really?
I can see that you are. Go on being positive, my darling.
Mother, today I would say anything to comfort you. As it is, I expect you know what is best yourself.
I expect I do. I know I ought to. I must.
Coming!
Oh, goodness, you!
Stella! I hope this is not an awkward time to drop in.
Time? How did you find my new address?
I knew you'd moved out of the old place shortly after that very sad business in 42. Bearing up?
Yes, thank you.
I thought a lot about you over the past 2 years, you know. I thought I should say hello now that I'm back.
Where have you been?
In some pretty queer spots of the world. Look, I do sympathise. I really do. I wanted you to know that.
I suppose... You'd better come in.
Thanks so much. I knew you wouldn't have hard feelings, but understandable if you did.
The sitting room's through here. You've been out of England?
I was switched. By chimney, what a view!
It's the first time the Abbey bells have rung for nearly 5 years. It's for the liberation of Paris.
In my own way, I may say I took quite a knock about that. But I have thought about you.
And you knew where to find me.
One soon picks up threads. Well, here we are. Back to it. Or don't you think so?
Let me tell you this. I've always wanted to say goodbye to you. Till this could be possible, you've haunted me. What's unfinished haunts one. Harrison.
That's the first time you've called me anything, I think.
What is your other name?
I don't know that you'd care very much for it. It's Robert.
Oh, I see. Well, I expect in any case I'd go on thinking of you as Harrison. Can you please tell me what happened? Obviously, it has never left my mind. You knew that Robert was going to be arrested that night. How much say did you have in it?
I always rather took it that he himself rather took it. The game was up. In that case, frankly, he knew as much as I did. It was up to him, naturally. I was out.
Since when?
The night before.
Oh? Since the night you...
dismissed me?
Stella, I never dismissed you. I'd never have done such a thing. Oh, no. What, at present, may I ask, are your plans?
That depends partly on my son. He has got his commission, and like everyone else, he believes the war will be over within the year. It also depends on my husband. I'm going to be married.
Yes. Good for you. Who's the lucky...
Someone I knew long ago from Ireland.
Ah.
You know I had connections there.
Oh, yes. Poor old Frankie used to talk about you.
Well, the lucky man is a sort of cousin of a cousin.
Rather more than that. He's a brigadier, isn't he?
You would know all about him, wouldn't you?
I'd rather like to meet your intended. Perhaps we'll run into each other sometime.
I hardly think that will be likely. Whichever way you look at it, it was you, after all, who killed Robert. Wasn't it?
In Christopher Fitzsimons' dramatization from the novel The Heat of the Day by Elizabeth Bowen, Stella was played by Harriet Walter, Robert by Michael Maloney, and Harrison by Bill Nye. Roderick was played by Giles Fagan, Mrs. Kelway, Margot Boyd, Ernestine, Francis Jeter, and Mr. Warby, Geoffrey Whitehead. The play was directed by John Tideman.